Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of Miss Nyagin Iskoyak. We are the Book Women, and my name is Kayla, and I am here with the fellow aunties.
I am Auntie Tana. That's what my niece calls me, Auntie Tana.
I thought you didn't know how to say your name for a second. I was me like, too.
And I don't know how to say my name.
Me too.
No, that is so totally. My niece always called me that as a kid. But my name is Tanya. And we're here with?
I'm Sheila. I know
I dumbfounded you all.
Yeah. You really did.
Tana. Yep.
All right. Well, for the rest of the episode, are we just going to be, you'll just be Tana from now on.
You could. Man, that was my nickname as a kid too. My mom used to call me Tana Bear.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. Well, it's cute when you first hear it, but the story behind it is the reason why I started getting called Bear as a kid was because I was so fucking grumpy and screaming all the time that my mom was like, you're like Grumpy Bear from the Care Bears. So then she started calling me Bear, and then it evolved from there.
Aw. Well,
not much has changed. I'm still grumpy on most days.
Well, that's okay.
I mean, look at what we're living through and the copious amounts of work that we have and that kind of shit. So it's okay to be grumpy.
Yeah. Yeah. How is everybody doing today? Are we all grumpy or no? Are we okay?
You know what? I don't think I'm grumpy yet today, but we'll see. You know, we'll see how the day progresses. I mean, I slept pretty good last night. My cat, who's an asshole, didn't wake me up. So that was not too bad. So we'll see. It's kind of looks like it might rain in Vancouver today, but hopefully.
Shocking.
You know what? We've had really great weather. So if it does rain, I won't be mad because it's been like 20 for the last week. So
we had one day like that.
Yeah.
Where same. we were all wearing shorts and then it snowed the next day.
Same.
I know. I've been enjoying taking photos of sitting on the beach and then sending it to all my friends in Alberta and being like, wish you were here. But then they don't realize how cold it actually is when the like wind comes off the water and you're like shivering under a blanket and you're like, it's beautiful. Oh, I'm so cold.
How are you doing, Sheila?
Oh, I'm chilling. I'm good. I just moved. My partner and I bought a house.
Yeah.
I know, right? It's like pretty crazy. It's like pretty like nuts. I never thought that would be the case. So we've officially been together for a year now, because it was a year after the day after 420 when I was like, perfect. I've been stoned for a long time. I should get my shit together. And like, maybe I should like see what this guy is all about. And then now 1 year later, we own a house. So like, and like, I asked him this morning, I was like, can I talk about like our house on the podcast? He's like, I don't see why not. Like, that's literally what happened. We bought a house together.
That's so funny.
We're in it.
Well, so. Happy anniversary.
Oh,
that's exciting.
Thanks. Thanks.
Did you celebrate and do something fun?
No.
No.
It's a
unpacking. Unpacking. Yeah. Yeah,
it's
it is.
A yeah. So, like, no, we just bought a house. We don't have money yet. So, yeah. No, we did not. Sorry. Like, should I lie and, like, say that we did something cool, but we didn't?
I mean, when you move, you have so much unpacking and shit to do that you're just like, it doesn't end. Like, we've been had our stuff moved from Alberta to BC since like February, beginning of February, and we still are not fully unpacked. And I don't know if we will ever unpack out of this apartment when we move. So,
yeah.
Moving is the worst.
It is.
I get it. If you don't need to unpack it, if you're going to move moving pretty quick, just leave it.
Yeah.
So, and the worst part about moving, this is what I've learned. So like the other places, we've always moved up. So like we had a smaller apartment, then we moved to a bigger apartment, and then we moved to a house, and then we moved to an acreage, and then we moved from an acreage and a home to a 600 square foot apartment, which is so hard to do.
Yeah.
Like downsizing like that was absolutely, I'm happy that we did it. I don't like keeping stuff. So I'm totally about throwing stuff out and donating it. And it was just like, what do we actually bring with us? What will fit in this apartment? And we still are at the stage where we have a whole bunch of furniture that was given to us. And we're like, do we actually go buy new furniture? Or do we just keep the stuff that was just given to us until we move to another apartment? Like,
are you going to move to another apartment?
I think we might stay here. We throw this around sometimes. Like sometimes we're like, oh, should we move to a bigger apartment? Blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, we live in a one bedroom apartment, but then like we live right beside the ocean. So I'm like, do I want to give this up? Like I walk out my door 3 blocks and I'm at the seawall in like Coal Harbor. So I'm like 20 minute walk from Stanley Park and like Second Beach. So that's often what Eric and I do. We go to the beach after work if it's nice out. Like we grab like a couple beers and just like head down to the beach and just like talk and like relax from work and play with all the dogs that are usually there, which is like my favorite thing. So,
oh, that's so cute.
I know, I'm missing having a dog. Last time we were there, there was like these two really cute dogs and one was just running around like crazy and the other one came, it was like a little chihuahua, and it came and sat between me and Eric on our blanket and just like sat there like, I live here now. I'm like, I love this dog. Like, yeah.
Aww.
So I think we'll stay probably like another year in this apartment. Our lease is up in August. So we'll probably stay until like August 2022, just because I think like we like being near the beach and because everything's still kind of like Vancouver and BC's, we're in like another phase of like shutting things down and like travel wise and that kind of stuff. So I think like we'll just stay here for another year and enjoy the summer by the water and then who knows. Yeah. And I'm like super sad because I mean, we definitely do need the travel restrictions and like stuff's getting pretty like out of hand. Like I'm vaccinated and I know y'all are vaccinated too, but like my partner's not vaccinated yet. And we were hoping to go over May long weekend to the island because our like besties with their little baby just moved to Victoria. They did the Alberta exit and just like moved to Victoria. And I'm like, I just want to see that little munchkin because I haven't seen him because he's born in January and I already lived in BC at that point. So Eric's got to snuggle him and squish his cute little face and I haven't. So we were supposed to go there and stay with them on their like, they also just moved to an acreage on the island. So I'm like, super, oh, wow. I'm like, they did like the opposite of what we did. They moved to an acreage on the island. And I'm like, I just want to go snuggle that baby and see my friends. But I guess we'll wait until the travel restrictions are a little bit better. And Eric gets his pokey poke in June is what he's thinking. So, cause he's registered now. It just has to wait.
It's a waiting game.
Yeah. So what are we reading today? Or what did we read?
We all read the book.
We read the book. Now we're all showing each other the book. Like, yes, I even put little post-it notes in my book.
Ooh.
That's how extra I am this morning. I've had 2 cups of coffee.
Wow. So April is poetry month and we read It Was Never Going to Be Okay by Jay Simpson.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did. y'all got some thoughts?
Yeah, first thing that I noticed was, and I thought that this one might be a spelling thing, but Jay's name is not capitalized. That was actually the first thing that I noticed out of this book. When I got it, I was like, interesting. I didn't do the research on that, but it kind of reminds me like Bell Hooks does not capitalize her name as well.
Yeah. You know what? Even in the back in the about the author section, their name isn't capitalized. And I think they use they, them pronouns.
Yes. Yeah, they do.
I don't think they used any capitalization in the entire thing, did they? I was thinking that it was a nod to Cree language.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah, because they don't capitalize either. I mean, they put in periods and commas and stuff, but
yeah. No
capitalization.
Interesting.
Yeah, decolonize that language.
Can I just say, though, like, I don't
So I don't read poetry as like a typical genre I gravitate towards. And like, poetry really intimidates me. Like, I feel like I'm like, oh, I'm not smart enough to like read poetry. Like, it's not, but like this was like great. And I feel like I understood it. Probably like it spoke to me on a level that I could like resonate with. It would probably like have a deeper meaning of understanding, whatever there's different levels that you can unpack for the word understanding, but it was not intimidating. And when I got into it, I was like, okay, I can read this. So if poetry is an intimidating thing for you, this book is, it's good. It's like, it's a moving book. It's very intense. At parts, but it's
it let's can pause for a second. Should we talk about what the collection is about?
Sure, yes.
Was that me volunteering myself?
Yes. Professor Tanya.
Bleh. Okay, so there, how do I describe this? It's a collection of poems and they're divided into four separate sections, and the first section kind of talks about their childhood, and the fourth section talks about healing. So for me, this collection of poetry was, I don't want to label it as a coming of age, but it's like a story of healing. It's their healing journey almost. So there's lots of different themes in here. They talk about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, Two-Spirit folks. They identify as Two-Spirit. So there's lots of queer themes in here as well. Urbaneity, the foster care system is talked about quite a bit. There is sexual violence, so trigger warning here, folks. There's sexual violence, there's racism, it's a raw look at the colonial experience from a Two-Spirit point of view, someone who grew up in the foster care system, mm-hmm. which is, I don't want to say it's a common point of view, because this is the first time I've actually read a book of poetry from that perspective, which is interesting. So it gave me a lot to think about. Did I hit all the marks?
I think you nailed it.
Yes. Nailed it. So did you two have a favorite poem or a poem that resonated with you the most?
Yes. Just let me look for the... Oh, fuck. Page 68, Decolonial Pussy.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that one, too. I love that title. Like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. So there's no capitalization. But the pussy, the title has dollar signs instead of S's.
I like that. I think including the dollar signs in there says something.
For sure.
Because a lot of their poems, they talk about objectifying bodies, especially yes. trans bodies. Yeah. And this is like, yep, okay.
And like
that is literally a thing.
Yeah.
Well, to be bought and sold.
And like their experiences with sex work, right? So
mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I noticed that some of these poems were actually in a sex workers anthology.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
I'm putting that on it's called Hustling Verse, an anthology of sex workers poetry. There's a few poems of theirs in the anthology. I want to read that.
Yeah, same. It's good to like be led to other things. Yeah, that was my favorite poem. What was your favorite poem?
You know what? The one that I liked, and one of the ones that resonated with me also on like, I liked it, but also on a salty level a little bit, which is on 24, lock stopping and libraries, of course, because libraries. So it goes, I stopped reaching out when she locked the door to my bedroom, got used to wet pillows from crying, stopped trying to impress her, stopped doing homework, stopped laughing, stopped painting and drawing, stopped writing and started reading. Ran away to the library, made sanctuary between the shelves and book covers, learned to stop asking. Oh, for me, I was like, other than I love it's a lock, the words yeah. are written out into a lock, which is awesome. But also for me, and just being kind of, you know, I think libraries in a lot of times were like, oh, we do so good, but yet we do so much harm still. So I'm like, this, look, people come to the library when they're having a hard time. So stop being dicks to little Native children. Like,
yes.
It's true. The library is a sanctuary for a lot of people.
Yet it somehow does so much harm in other cases. Yeah. So
like,
yeah,
it's a sanctuary until it isn't.
Exactly.
And then what?
And then what? And then you get salty Indigenous aunties just shitting all over them in a podcast where we're just like, excuse me.
Uh-huh. It's, you know what, Jay Simpson, you are super cheeky. There's a few like post-it notes that I wrote. I'm like, cheeky, I like it. I'll find an example here. On page 14, there's one called Teeth and Sharp Bones. And they basically say, like, yet we still have to hold these babies accountable for the sins of our ancestors. Let's get something straight for once. We didn't commit any sin, you know, unless you count breathing as a sin. So I guess that John A. McDonald wanted us dead was sin enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read that. I was like, I like this. I like this a lot. But it wasn't my favorite. Like, I had a few. I had a few that really resonated with me more, like, on a sad kind of a level. Yeah, especially sure. The ones that talk about sexual violence. And it's interesting the way that they describe it is ways that I've thought about it in my head. Like, there's a poem that's titled Beast. And it talks about a sexual experience where the man that they're sleeping with transforms into a beast during the action. Or no, sorry, I think I got this backwards. There's this one line that just got me all weird. They talk about having their body being used as a masturbation tool.
Yeah.
I bet there are a lot of folks who have felt that way. I think my poem, though, the poem that I like the most when they talk about sex as medicine.
Mm. Totally.
Bedroom Hymns, that one was my favorite.
I really do like the one, like, Raven.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, on 98. I really liked it.
What did you like about it?
It made me hopeful for decolonization and, like, thinking towards the future and leaving some of the, like, trauma in the past behind and, like, starting to decolonize more. It was just very, when I read it, I was, like, very calmed, like, mm-hmm. had a sense of calming. And also just, I think, because, like, I see ravens all the time, like, in Vancouver, and I find them to be very, very calming. I know they can be kind of little turds sometimes, but they like to attack people's hair when they're walking down the street. I definitely have seen ravens like jumping after people down the sidewalk, which is hilarious. But I found it to just be a very calming poem for myself.
Yeah, that one's the second to last poem.
Mm.
And it's so fitting. I don't know if you two notice this at all. Like, the metaphors, I guess, they've changed throughout the course of the book. And I don't know if this is on purpose or something, or it's just the topics that they're talking about. That last section in section 4, most of the imagery and most of the metaphors are related back to the land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If not all of them. Whereas more in the middle, it was about, like, demons and Jesus, and yeah, it was almost like they were making their way back to mm-hmm. the land, which I found interesting. Back to the land and back to themselves.
Who do you think should read this book?
I want to say adults.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Truly.
Yeah. Adults. No, you know, children in this book.
Yeah.
Or for this book.
We pivoted towards some adult content.
Mm-hmm. I would say that this is a book for Indigenous people, like, for queer Indigenous people. There's a lot of connecting in this book, and a lot of, like, really, it hits a lot of the poems, like, hit home, and it's that, like, self-realization. Like, one of the ones that really, like, kind of almost choked me up was, like, the Indians in the downtown east side one, because like, we, Eric and I drive that way so often. Like, I live in the downtown core, so that one just, like, it hits home to see, like, our relatives down there and the way that people are treated, but even the way that, like society treats individuals and, like, how dehumanizing the world can be. And so that one, like, really resonated with me on that, like, really sorrow. It pulled on my heartstrings, which doesn't happen often. So, so I think this really is though, like a book for Indigenous people to share like that emotion together and to read and to share those like experiences and to like reflect on what's happened to us and, you know, the positive and the negative. So,
man, Jay Simpson, where are you from? Where are you from, girl? Like there's poems about Vancouver. There's poems about the prairie. This is something like that kind of solidifies your opinion there, Kayla. There are so many things that, I don't know, I want to say Easter eggs. There's like little Easter eggs in this poetry that I feel only an Indigenous person on basically like east side of, or not east, on the west side of Canada, or what we now know as Canada, would really pick up on.
Yeah, totally. Like,
holy cow. So my family, as you both know, our Métis family come from a small village in Manitoba called St. Ambrose. And there is a poem that mentions St. Ambrose in here. And I was like, what the fuck? I have never seen St. Ambrose listed anywhere in anything before. And I was like, holy cow. And they talk about like Indigenous folks, some of us being marsh people. And that is what St. Ambrose is. It is the marsh. Lots of duck hunting, lots of trapping and stuff going on there. Like,
that's because they are from Sepotwayak, I think it is.
Where is that?
It's up near Pelican Rapids. So it's up Dawson Bay. It's on Lake Winnipeg, where Lake Winnipeg Osas.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder how far, I need to look that up.
So it's up at the top of it.
Oh, it's at the top? Top like north?
Yeah. Yep, top north.
And that's Lake Manitoba?
Lake Winnipeg Osas.
Oh.
So it's up from Lake Manitoba and across from Lake Winnipeg.
Wow.
But yeah, I know they live in Vancouver now.
Yeah.
Or what we know is Vancouver now. But yeah, definitely the prairie Easter eggs. I was like, whoa. Yeah, I had that same experience, Tanya, when I was reading it.
Yeah. So they're from like the Interlakes region in Manitoba, which is kind of where I'm from as well. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have some relatives in common.
Yeah, I got some relatives in Dauphin. So
yeah. Kind of,
yeah.
Maybe we're all related.
Right.
Probably. We're either related or, you know, feuding families that don't get along.
Oh God. Yeah, truly.
Yeah. We all have our own family drama. That's for sure.
I mean, yeah. I do think though, so one of the things for this book, like other than we've said that it's great for like Indige people to read. I do think this would be a really great book to incorporate into Indigenous studies classes, literature, into like gender studies or queer studies. So
there's so many ways that you could use this, like even sexual, like erotica studies.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Also, I feel like people that are like causing harm to like trans communities and like Indigenous trans people, fuck, they should read this, you know, like fuck off with your hurtful actions and like the ways that you go about like getting your needs met, right? Which is so colonial. Think a bit about the people that you're affecting. I mean, I know it probably wouldn't appeal, and it probably like wouldn't,
I'm not sure they would get it.
I know,
you know? They'd probably like at the end of reading it, they'd probably say, oh, it wasn't me.
Yeah, of course.
Or they're like, they needed that, like, I don't know, they would probably find some sort of a way to deflect some responsibility.
I mean,
not everyone, of course.
But yeah, of course. And also it's like at this, like as I'm saying that, I'm like, well, like Indigenous pain doesn't always need to be like on display for like white cis men. It doesn't. But also there's just a lot there.
There is, but like,
yeah,
I understand what you're saying. And I am very much somebody that I don't really like poverty porn.
Of course.
But yes. For me, when I read this, it almost seems as if they had written these poems over a span of time. And this is something that they had in their journal, you know?
Yeah.
And that this was a way that they were able to, what am I trying to say? That they were able to process their trauma. So it was almost like looking into someone's diary.
Well, yeah. This is like an anthology though, right? So these poems, like at least a bunch of them have already been published as far back as 2018. Like if you go to the acknowledgements, it'll say all the poems that have been published previously. So this is like an anthology of them put together. That's why it reads like that, because it's all of them coming together into one.
So it literally spans the years. I like this. I would definitely incorporate this into a mainstream poetry class, because I think every poetry class should have an Indigenous voice or many Indigenous voices. I think this is really important in terms of representation.
Like yes.
We were talking about before, like we need to read other people. Put down 1984, put down Animal Farm. Let's read this stuff instead. It's just theory.
That's that, like, disrupting the canon. Like, why do we have to teach the old, like, within curriculum? Like, why do we have to teach, you know,
Shakespeare?
pick from Shakespeare. Pick from, like, you know, Orwell. Pick from, what is his name? John Steinbeck. Pick one of the Steinbeck books, which right. I do really like. I don't mind John Steinbeck's writing, but it's like, you know, we can disrupt the canon in ways and teach new literature and teach from other perspectives and voices. I think this is one of the things too, like I don't think that we need to be so, especially within schools, and I know this comes up within school librarianship, is like I don't think we need to be so careful with what kids are reading, because they can handle, you know, some hard truths, and they need to handle it too. Like they need to learn what the real world is like outside of life. Some kids learn it through lived experiences, but others like literally do not. I had someone the other day tell me that they didn't know what stress was until they started working. And I was like,
what?
I know.
Who are you? I want your life.
I know. I was like, are you kidding me? Like I've seen and been through some shit in my life. And it's just like, how have you never been stressed until you became an adult and started working? So I think the kids can have that slap of reality if they aren't already experiencing it, but yeah. Also yes, disrupt the canon. We can read other things. There are other things out there. And I know Tanya, you've even had that experience of being like, you know, there's more than that one author that you can use.
There's a lot of great Indigenous authors. I don't know why we aren't showing the buffet or enjoying the buffet. I'm gonna stuff my pants. I brought my eating pants ready to go.
Well, and it's like, it's not just like Indigenous authors, but it's like authors from all over the place. Like, why are we not learning about different types of like writing and literature? Like, yes, Shakespeare has its place, but there's other authors and other authors from other countries that also write really great books that are just not read. So
in high school, like, I think that's what really like turned me off of poetry. It's like, oh, well, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
This isn't my thing.
Well, and it teaches like, for me, like it teaches a lot more about like different writing styles, but also about different reading. Like, I don't know if you've ever read like Irvine Welsh, who wrote Trainspotting, and the book is written like you read it with an accent, like with a really heavy Scottish accent. And the words are written like that too. So it teaches like more cognitive, like for reading comprehension. And I think too, with poetry, like when the words are lined up differently, and I said the one is like a lock, you learn so much more. But I am also not a teacher, and I bet some teachers are like, Kayla, what are you talking about? You're not a teacher.
Well, to be fair, at least in Alberta, our curriculum isn't made by teachers or even like looked at. I hope that you saw the one, Sheila, like the one meme that's going around about, I forget exactly what it says, but one of the learning outcomes is, or one of the activities, I should say, is students using a map of Alberta, chart the distance between Regina and Duck Lake.
Oh. I know, I actually had to.
You can't make that up.
That broke my brain. That actually broke my brain that day, because I was like, but that does, they're not on that map. I was literally sitting,
they're not even in that, yeah, they're not in that province. Come on, people.
How do you do that? Like, yeah, anyways.
Wow.
It's nuts.
It depends on who's driving and how fast they're going.
Exactly.
That's how far it is between Regina and Duck Lake.
Maybe that's the lesson. The lesson is to realize that it's not even in Alberta.
Yeah, there was a couple ones that were just like, what are you actually talking about? Like, there was a few, I know dinosaurs have been taken out of the curriculum too, which I was like, but Alberta.
Yeah, our education system is going back in time.
Yeah, that's true. But hopefully some parents and, you know, some adults out there will take the time to reteach children or do the like schooling on that is wrong, and use your own brain and learn how to think critically.
Let's hope.
I mean, the thing that I've been really, really enjoying is there was that one MLA from Calgary, I believe, that was like, I know this person, and they were involved in lesbian activities, and they didn't want to be involved in lesbian activities anymore. And it's like, it's about, I'm pretty sure that the whole conversation was about convergent therapy, but I love the MLA Janice Irwin. I used to be in her riding when I lived in Edmonton. And you know, what are these lesbian activities? Like, I don't know, gardening came to my head. Like, they didn't want to be involved in lesbian activities anymore. Like, what are these?
Gardening as a lesbian activity.
I don't know when they were talking about that. I was just like, gardening. I don't know.
I've been watching the Alberta soap shit opera show. Yeah.
It's a shit show. Why do I live here again?
I don't know.
You should have. Yeah, I mean, you could have taken a job at like UFV, University of Fraser Valley, or somewhere else.
Could have.
They would have hired you. University of Washington was looking for Indigenous librarian stuff.
They're looking for people all over the place. Like, mm-hmm. I really wish that the pandemic didn't stall my PhD as much as it did. But, you know, I guess I can't blame the pandemic. I should, like, acknowledge my own part in this as well. One day I'll be looking for a job. That's a future me problem, or a future me, like, celebration. Yeah.
How many years do they give you to do it?
I don't even know.
Well, there you go.
I know a few people who have gone through and done it in like 8 years. I know the U of A is like really wanting to pump people out. So who knows? Who knows?
Yeah,
who
I'm knows still.
What'll happen?
Yeah, I would like the iSchool at UBC to have part-time PhD program for LIS, but they don't. It's full-time. So that makes it like impossible when you're trying to work. I mean, it's not impossible. It's just kind of impossible. Already so busy, don't need that on my plate, but it would be nice if they did, because then I would sign up.
Let's get back to the book.
Yes,
we always trail off. It happens My family all does that too. Maybe it's a Métis thing. Holy cow, this I have not had much experience with the foster care system. One of my uncles was a foster child, but that was kind of about the closest that I got. But this experience is heartbreaking to have 12 different sets of parents. Like, how stressful is that for a kid? It's basically having your life planned out for you before you're even born, which just sucks. Like, there's this one poem here on page 22. It's a part of a larger set called Haunting, which I would totally love to talk about after this, but this is about, it's about family photo albums, and I can just read an excerpt here. One year, I came across a family album. Couldn't find a smaller version of myself. Couldn't find a fuller smile of myself. Couldn't find anything but photos of a woman I called Cynthia, a dead man, and her daughter. I saw vacations in Disneyland, Mexico, and London, ones I was always kept from. Can you imagine if everyone in your household went to Disneyland and you were left at home? What the fuck is that? That's actually what I wrote on my little sticky note, WTF.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, especially with foster parents and foster situations, like, there are some great foster families out there. And I've had like the privilege of meeting one family from the town that I grew up in. There was a family that fostered a lot of children, but they were actually just like an absolute amazing family and often fostered children with special needs. That's what they did, because both of the parents had the capabilities to take care of special needs and children with disabilities. And so they had a lot of kids and they would often adopt siblings at the same time so that the siblings would be able to stay in the same family. And they were absolutely like amazing. And my mom knew them fairly well because she was also like a nurse. Yeah. But then there's the other foster situations where, you know, people do get paid money to foster children. And so that is also problematic because then you're taking in kids, you don't really care about them, you're not treating them like your own children, and you're getting paid for it. And it's absolutely horrible. And also there's like, some families are great with learning, especially when they're fostering Indigenous kids, you know, they learn about the community and the culture, but then others, they just don't give a flying fuck about it. It's so sad to not keep, especially Indigenous kids with Indigenous families and with their own families too. The foster system, it's absolutely terrible here in Canada.
It's like the new residential schools, really.
Absolutely, it is.
Yeah.
So we're still experiencing colonial legacies. Here's just another example of that. I'm so glad, though, that there are good people out there.
Yes.
And good people in the world, because that gives me hope. But
there's good people out there, but it's like, you know, they are still rare. It's still rare to find good foster families. It's still one of those things, like, you know, do you remember like not many years ago, but there was kind of that trend of people adopting kids from overseas and things like that. And there still is with people adopting kids from other countries. You know how many kids are waiting to be adopted here in Canada? A lot. So I always get a little bit like, you know, I have close connections with adoption and like, it's something personal to me. So I'm just like, yeah, it burns my butt a little bit when kids here are spending their whole life in the foster system because they are not getting adopted. I mean, and not to shit on anyone that like adopted a kid from overseas, but it's just like, we should be thinking about those kids here that need to be adopted.
Yeah. Take care of life at home first.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's, I imagine in my head, at least, maybe the reason why they do that is because they're babies.
They're still babies here that need to be adopted.
I've had some conversations with some nasty people and they're like, I wouldn't foster or I wouldn't adopt because like of all of the stuff that the kid has experienced, they behave this way or behave that way. I'm like, dude, that just means they need a loving home.
Well, look at the environment that they're living in. They're living in fucking foster care where, you know, not all foster parents are good. So
yeah, I don't think I would ever foster. I've thought into fostering for sure. I definitely want to foster a child, but I don't think I would want a young child. I would bring on a teenager, come live with me. You know, because not many teenagers are getting into good homes or are getting adopted, those types of things, right?
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. I used to be a youth worker, like for a group home for teenage girls. And once you get like above a certain age, which is like, honestly, maybe 4, like then like you're just stuck in the foster system, and then you just get moved through and like moved around to different places, and like nobody wants to adopt a teenager. Nobody.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like they're the ones that need the most help.
Yeah,
especially me during my teenage years. Like I feel like teenage years, that's when parents kind of back off because the teenager wants to be or needs to be self-sufficient and they like to do their own thing and stay away from their parents. But like, realistically speaking, like the teen years are pretty intense. Lots of things are changing, getting new social circles, getting a whole new body essentially. You know, there's a lot of stuff that you need your parents for, or you need a guardian or someone who loves you to guide you through that process.
Yeah, the teen years are rough.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
I think all of us are just like, like,
yeah, I was a little asshole.
Oh my God. I don't know how. Well, my dad died when I was 15, so he never really had to experience. I don't know how my mom did it. Like, she got those 2 years of, you know, depressed, overly sexual, like just hypersexual teen, like hormones, and just being like also getting really into like emo music and stuff. And just, oh my God. That's why I always said I don't want kids, because I couldn't raise myself. Like, I think about it and I'm like, oh my God, if I had to raise myself, I don't think I could. Like, maybe my partner, like Eric, really was a pretty chill person. I think the worst that he ever did was like get drunk, spill a drink, and then wring it back out onto the carpet. But like, I'm just thinking about the debauchery that I got into as like a kid. And I'm like, I couldn't, I would be that parent. I'd be like my mom waiting up all night. I just, yeah, freaks me out. But then I'm like, in my brain, I'm like, oh, my poor mom. Like, as an adult, I'm like, oh, my poor mom. Like, she's been passed away since I was like 17. But I'm like, oh, I put her through so much and I feel so bad about it. But also can't change that.
You brought up something that I kind of want to pull the thread on a little bit, is depression and anxiety in your teen years. There is such a big stereotype that it's like, oh, teenagers are just like that. But that's not true. Like, I think people are using that stereotype to ignore mental health problems.
Oh, 100%.
You know, like, yeah, I was depressed since I was a kid, you know, like I've had depression since then. Like, can you imagine if you were given tools, or if like we were put in therapy since we were little? Like, the times are changing now.
Yeah.
But like, I hate that stereotype. Oh, teens are just lazy. They sleep all the time, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, no. Take a step back and realize they could be depressed.
Yeah.
And I think though, like when we're reading these books and stuff, a lot of the topics that come up as we're talking about them is about healing and healing journeys. And I think I wasn't much about like writing or poetry when I was a teenager, but I think that can be a really big healing thing for individuals, is writing about your experiences, writing about your feelings. I like to paint. So it was often like painting, that kind of stuff. So for me, that was, although I'm not a good painter, my artwork is absolutely horrible. But you know, it's an expressive outlet. Or like music. I really like music. Again, not a great musician, but I really like music. I like listening to music. I like getting lost in music and just like singing at the top of my lungs inappropriately, like in the grocery store. I still do it to this day.
I do the same thing. I sing in the grocery store too.
I was singing Backstreet Boys in the grocery store the other day, and I'm pretty sure Eric was like, oh my God, I'm leaving now. Like, but I think it's just kind of like, it's calming. Like I said, like there's that poem in here that was just calming. And I think especially when you've been through so much stuff in your life at a young age, and teenagers go through stuff that like, we can't even like, you know, especially now, like I didn't have much social media when I was a teenager. The internet still wasn't really a thing in Tofield. So that whole like now with the internet, it's completely different. And I'm just like, teenagers go through so much that like, I don't even understand like the pressures of teenagers to this day. Like especially right now. And I'm just like, I feel for them.
Yeah.
It's rough. And I know so many people are just like, oh, they're teenagers. They're just moody. And it's like, not always. Sometimes it's a bigger thing, you know, something could be going on, and teenagers need that creative outlet for doing things. And that could be anything. And it could be, you know, sports, arts, making TikToks. I mean, that's a creative outlet.
It's absolutely creative. And like, I think like, when I was 25, I went back home, and like this conversation really reminded me that I used to write all the time. I was like constantly like writing in a journal, like just like so like much, like just writing and writing and writing. I was like, I cannot deal with this. Like, I do not want to ever look at these. I threw all my journals out in the garbage, in the recycling. And like, I think about that now as like a 33 year old. I'm soon to be 34. My birthday's in June. Anyway, and like, I think I like still act like a child. And I think about like, what if I would have valued like what I did as a teenager? Mm-hmm. Like what? Like, I don't want to like go back and like see like, I'm feeling these feelings, but like also like, what if I actually did have some good stuff there that I just threw in the garbage? Cause I was like, my partner had just died, and I was like, oh, I can't deal with my teenage self. I have to deal with like my widowed self now. I'm 25. I don't know how this works. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
I just like didn't want to deal with any of it. So I just threw it in the garbage.
Oh, so you don't have any writing from when you were younger? None?
Hell no. Nope.
Oh, I was going to say, like, we should totally bring out our journals when we were younger for an episode. That would be hilarious.
Oh, my God. I only have one instance of my writing, and I think I was in grade 2 or something. And it's like a little journal that I have when I don't even know what was going on. But I was so dramatic, and it is hilarious to this day. It's like, I woke up and I was sad, and then I died, and I'm like, this is like Kayla at a young age just being so dramatic. Like, I was angry and then I died. Like, I really read it to Eric, and he was like, that is you, just so dramatic. I'm like, then I died.
Oh God,
that's so funny. See, my journals are so different. My journals from when I was in elementary school are all about how boy crazy I was. Oh my really? God, I used to play kissing tag at recess. Like, I used to like so many boys that in my head, like, what I had to do is write all of their names on a piece of paper, fold them up, and then pick one, because I could only have the energy to put out to one person for some reason. Like, that was my thought process as a kid. But yeah, I remember when I was in preschool, we were all supposed to take naps and things. But I asked my mom if she could write a note for me to excuse myself from nap time, because the boy I had a crush on never took naps and I wanted to spend some one-on-one time with him. So yeah, I don't know. Not much has changed.
I mean, I got some feels over the poem in this book about 4-H and 4-H boys. So
yeah, one was that?
I can't remember what page it's on, but it's talking about how they wanted to join 4-H because they were in love with one of the boys from 4-H or had a crush on them, like a tall blonde boy.
Yeah.
I'm like, I feel that, even though I'm like, that's, you know what, I get my heart goes pitter patter for cowboys occasionally, and I'm like, that's because I grew up in the middle of nowhere. Like, this is the conditioning from all those years. Like, totally not my type. Everybody has their type. Like, Katie.
So Lang, your type is cowboy.
Occasionally,
you have the cowboy type.
I mean, my type is like Adam Driver or Katie Lang. So like,
it perfect.
Depends on the day. It just depends on my mood.
Adam Driver, come on.
Look at my husband. He's like,
yeah.
Fairly similar, except for he has blonde hair and not black. But Eric did have black hair when I met him. So he's like the younger version of Adam Driver, just tall with like long facial features, that kind of stuff. I like, or Katie Lang. I like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have like my heart for Katie Lang. I like,
yeah. That's not my, Adam Driver just doesn't do it for me. I respect
that. I don't even know who that is.
Kylo Ren.
Adam Driver.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Duh. Okay.
Mine is Poe. What's the actor's
name? Oh, I cannot remember his name, but yes, I know the character you're talking about.
Poe. From Star Wars.
Everyone has a crush on Star Wars, eh?
Of course. Oh, Oscar Isaac. Oscar Isaac. Everybody's like screaming at the podcast. Like,
I mean,
your Star Wars crush.
I mean, my like, Star Wars crush is Natalie Portman.
Oh,
I love her.
Of
yes,
course.
Please. Yes. Black Swan all the way over to my bedroom. Thank you.
I should have known. Like, when I was a kid, and my parents should have known. I mean, how did I not know until I was like an adult that I definitely was not straight? Like, I mean, I watched Constant Craving a lot when I was a kid, because Kate, like Constant Craving, Katie Lang, just, mm-hmm. Oh, even to this day, I'm like, I follow Katie Lang on Twitter, and I just like, yeah, actually I sent a TikTok video to Eric, and it's about guys that have like bi wives, and it's like, he's a hetero guy, but he just loves his wife. It's like, bi wife energy. He's a great ally, but he loves his wife. Bi wife energy. And I'm just like, I look at Eric and I'm like, that's totally you. And he's like, yeah, it is. I'm like, yeah. But yeah, Katie Lang. Oh, yeah. If Katie Lang listened to this, I would just be like, I love you.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like totally turning red too. I'm blushing. I can see that. Aww. I'm going to stop now. I'm going to stop myself. I'm getting like giddy. Anyways. There you go, folks. Now we know.
Now we know what makes Kayla blush.
Adam Driver, Katie Legg.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if we told you this. One of the, what is it? Icebreakers. One of the icebreakers that Kayla and I did for our class one year, Sheila, is what's your favorite Disney character?
Oh.
Or is it Disney villain? I think it was Disney villain because I'm a huge Disney nerd. I am what I am.
Yeah.
And I put up like Lock, Shock, and Barrel because I love Nightmare Before Christmas. And I know Kayla likes Kylo Ren. So I put this like super sexy photo of Kylo Ren, like showing his abs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I was like bright red. Like all these students are just like, what is wrong with Kayla? And it's like, okay.
Yeah, I picked the most inappropriate picture of Kylo Ren that I could.
Amazing.
So like, yes, like Adam Driver as like a human is just like sexually attractive to me. But also like the whole Kylo Ren thing though is just like really brooding, like emotional men. Like I just want to, I just
fix them.
Not even fix. Not fix. I'm not there
pound
to fix
them.
You. There you go. I'm not there to fix you. I'm just there to feed off your like negative energy and just maybe give you a little right on your bum or something. Like,
yeah, of course. Yeah, you gotta get them into shape. I get it.
Shit. You know they like it.
Of course. Oh my God.
I'm so glad Eric's in the shower right now. He's cracking up because he's probably.
It's really funny because I'm literally recording this in the closet. So it's like really funny. There's like this whole metaphor of being in the closet to talk about like this super queer shit. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's funny. There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. So let's do some more unpacking since we're on the sex zone. I want to loop back to the sex as medicine metaphor because It can be medicine. It can also be poison, poison or medicine, depending on how you use it, right? Or I guess it shouldn't be in those kinds of binaries, but holy cow. I really liked that. And I love that they dropped Tennille Campbell's name in there too. They're buddies with Tennille Campbell. Just so cool. For those of you who don't know who that is, Tennille Campbell, she did a poetry anthology as well. And it's, what is it called? Indian Love Poems. And it's all saucy stuff. I've seen her live at Teepee Confessions and holy fuck, you leave hornier than when you came in. And then you're like, oh, I need to pound something. Fuck it. Literally. So sex is medicine.
Yeah. What resonated for you about that?
Well, I have a history with sexual violence. And honestly, I am now with my partner for over a year now. He's my COVID lovebird. Yeah, so I don't want to get into too much detail because it's probably, you know, inappropriate and crossing boundaries, but it is totally healing. It is totally healing. Like, actually, it is so different, like having sex when you feel safe. It is a totally different experience because you can actually let go and be in the moment. So it's healing in a lot of different ways because it's also teaching you mindfulness and being present, which makes sex all the better.
Yeah, like you definitely have to be in a good place. Like I know I've struggled with like a lot of body issues and stuff throughout my life, like my whole entire life. And I'm just learning to be more comfortable at 32 on what I look like and like, you know, just stopping or trying to, you know, stopping thinking about how much other people care. Like I'm letting my grays grow out. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not going to dye my hair. I'm stopping dyeing my hair, doing that kind of stuff, but there's other things I'm still going to do. Like I'm going to dye my eyebrows and perm my eyelashes because they make me feel good. But when it comes to other things, like I know when I was like younger, I really wanted a boob job and I've kind of left that in the past. Cause that was probably like one of the most traumatic experiences of my life was having like a plastic surgeon tell me at like 21 that I had the boobs of a 50-year-old. It crushed
what
me.
What the hell?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was just like, it was so horrible. But you know, when you're not feeling good about yourself, you also don't want to be intimate with like a partner. And for myself and like for my relationship with Eric, I'm like, I just need to feel better about myself. Like he's been here for 14 years and something must be keeping me here. So, you know, but also it's good for myself, like to have practice that like self-love and appreciate the curves and that kind of stuff, you know,
yeah.
And forget that my dad used to always tell me that I was built like a brick shit house. Like that's literally, and I even told that to Eric the other day. I'm like, I'm never going to be like tall and skinny because I'm built like a brick shit house. I'm 5 feet tall and like
the strongest person I've ever met.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My You're baba. Super strong. Like my Ukrainian baba used to be like, you'd be good for plowing the fields, and that not being like that I could control the horse. I think she literally meant that I could pull the plow. And I'm like,
you have done something similar though in your weightlifting training, haven't you?
Yeah.
So you could.
Probably. But you know, just like, you know, learning to feel like comfortable with yourself is big for like,
yeah,
you know, having relationships with other people. So,
and like sex is medicine also can, it can be a lot of different things. Like if you have, oh, I don't know, let's just say some chronic illnesses with your body, like your relationship to medicine, like in a Western context is different anyways, just because, you know, it just is. And like, there's like, it's a really complicated thing that we could talk about forever, but we don't necessarily have to. But like, you know, those moments when like your body like can feel like good, real good, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, my body isn't just this source of like frustration and pain and like fatigue, sadness, you know, it's also mm-hmm. like a source of like,
I get you. There was, I can't remember which podcast this was, but I listened to a podcast about having sex with a disability.
Yeah.
And it actually like really changed a lot of the way I look at my body, because I have a chronic condition as well. Not the same, but different. Holy cow, Sheila, you need a sex wedge.
A sex wedge.
Yeah. Like heard of those?
Like the pillow.
It's like a little ramp. So like yeah. on my bad days, like you can prop yourself on this ramp and you can get, you know, the desired angles. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds There's awesome.
So many different awesome things that you can use to help you and make things hotter.
I mean,
which I was totally oblivious to. So taking my power back on that one.
I mean, I just have a million pillows on the bed. Duh.
Well, that also works.
Well, I mean, for many reasons. My bed is sacred. Like, my bed is the sacred place. You know, like, when I'm not feeling good, like, I'm in bed now for potentially, mm-hmm. like, you don't know. So, like, it is a sacred place for me. Anyway, yeah, you can also just use a million pillows. And like when people are like, why do you have a million pillows? I'm like,
Think about it.
Use your brain.
You know, this is a total side, well, kind of a side note, but we should totally do a season or like a series about
erotic literature,
sex writing, erotica. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Because we could totally talk about Tennille Campbell, and we can totally talk about different, oh, love and space, or
yeah,
love and
space and
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is this going to be our not safe for work series?
Yeah. I love that.
Although I would say that some of our episodes definitely are.
Yeah. Like we're already there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we don't really have a filter anymore. Like we've been doing this for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes. If anyone is listening to this and they want to sponsor a anti not safe for work series where we just be Métis aunties and talk about Indigenous or just erotic literature and all the people that we love and lust over, we're down.
Yeah.
We're down. All right. Do we have any last questions, comments about it was never going to be okay? I can always find something to say. There is a metaphor on page 102. And if you two have nothing else to add, I think this would be a good way to close. So I'll read this little insert. It is from the poem called About the Ones I Want to Love, which is on page 101 for those of you following along. And it says, it will hurt me, for scar tissue is protection and thickness, rough and tough. The body saying, not again. Scar tissue covers nerves and you have to cut a little deeper to get to where you want. I love this metaphor. I love it. It kind of gives off the vibes of, you know, we all have scars. We all have trauma at varying levels, and we have scar tissue, but the scar tissue is there to make us stronger. It's there to build you into a different person, or the person that you're meant to be, mm-hmm. as opposed to like weighing you down. I thought that was super uplifting. I've never thought about scar tissue that way as protecting.
I'm just thinking, there's lots of thoughts. And it's also something that we like scarring and like scar tissue. And it's like a thing that we embrace, right? Like as intentional or not, like intentionally, like body modification is definitely a thing that we've talked about on this podcast before. And it's like also a part of traditions of like tattooing as protection and things like that. But also like even the non-intentional scar tissue that comes at us from just shit that we didn't ask to have placed upon us can still take that. And it is still a source of power and protection for us.
I love it. I have nothing else to say. I liked it. I just liked that.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. And like, not to be in depth about my particular flavor of chronic illness, but like scar tissue, like protecting nerves and like covering nerves. I was like, whoa, yeah. Like,
well, that's the thing, right? Like sometimes, at least with my own body and my own experiences kind of going through chronic illness, is that at a certain point, like your pain gets so bad that you don't even feel it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's the scar tissue covering your nerves, right? Mm-hmm. So by unpacking that scar tissue and looking and paying attention to it, that's where you uncover some real shit.
Yeah.
And the pain comes back and you're like, why did I do this to myself? Oh yeah, I can feel again. That's good, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's wrap up.
All right, so, well, thank you everyone.
And big thank you to our sponsors.
Yes.
So huge thanks to ILSA, the Indigenous Literary Studies Association, ACUTE, Association of Canadian College and University Teachers of English, and SHRC, Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council. Thank you for funding the season. If not for you, we would not be sitting here right now.
Yeah, thank you to our sponsors. And thanks you two for jumping on for this conversation today. I feel like I hadn't seen you in a while, so it was good to get caught up and talk about stuff. And we have, I believe, one more episode in this season.
Yes,
one more. That'll be exciting.
Yeah, we're going to be reading Cherie Demoline's new book. I think it's called Into the Wild.
The Empire of Wild?
Empire of Wild.
Yeah, Empire of Wild.
Sorry, apologies.
It's all good.
So if you have questions or comments, please tweet us, email us, connect with us in any way that is comfortable for you, and we'll talk about the book.
Yeah. Hi. See y'all next time. We are the Book Women, and we are out.